This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
Dialogue Assassination with Political Research Specialist Mae Brussel. And I'm Phil Cogan. Welcome, Mae, to another show in a never-ending series of programs.
I hope they keep going. You think they'll keep going?
I think so.
Oh, last week,
as long as people want to hear it.
Yeah, I think if you want to hear Dialogue Assassination, I think you should write to KLRB and tell them you appreciate having an hour for research on a specific subject. This is a very narrow subject. It's a broad one for me, but in the range of people's interests, a lot of people are not particularly understanding of a whole hour devoted to this program. We have very loyal followers who take tapes and cassettes every week and are in touch with me, and some that I learn about each week that are listening that I haven't been in touch with before. But if you're interested in this show, if you're following it every week or very often, write to KLRB and tell them. Last week there was a disc jockey on, Phil, who announced that if you're interested in this talk show on Saturday afternoon, he didn't mention it by name, to write the station. So I think you should write Box 3094 in Carmel.
3904.
3904, oh. Or my home address, the only Brussel listed in Carmel Valley, or Carmel, and tell them that you want the show and give me your name and address, because newsletters are, I'm going to talk more next week about a newsletter that is going to be started on the subject of political assassinations.
Now, what is Dialogue Assassination about? We try to refresh it for people who just tuned in for the first time.
You do it. I have a question here, sort of information overload. There's so much to talk about today. You rehash what it's about.
Okay, well, Dialogue Assassination is involved with political assassinations and how they relate to the news that you read about every day in your newspapers and hear on the broadcast stations, TV and radio. Has to do with the events and how they're tied together. And there's a lot of research that Mae Brussel has done over the last
nine years
concerning the assassination, starting with the John Kennedy assassination, and a lot of facts that don't quite mesh together and make you wonder.
My facts don't measure the government facts.
Right, right. And okay. The fact, yeah, okay. Let's straighten that out.
My facts don't mesh with theirs.
But you may go into the listening to the program for the first time with a certain bit of skepticism, and the people who have been with the program for the 40 or I don't know how many shows have been on now.
9 months.
There's still loyal followers, still taping every show. They're starting to wonder and ask questions, and people who thought Mae was somewhat of a lunatic are now acting a little bit differently.
Yep. So people are more open to the subject of a conspiracy or a total conspiracy now, because the news is coming in. More lawsuits are coming on people not telling the truth. Information's coming out. We'll go right into the material today to show how we can analyze the news today. Some shows are very specific, where we take one government document and tear it apart and compare it to the research that I've done. And today we're going to take a broad covering of news, because we haven't done this for a few weeks.
Okay. One thing I wanted to stress before we get right into that is the fact that you don't have to agree with the program to listen to it regularly. If you just think about what Mae says and ask some intelligent questions and approach it with an open mind, I think that's all that Mae or anybody else could ask of you.
Or if you have a disagreement, I'd appreciate your writing it. We've done talk shows a lot of times. I've been on KIDD and we did it. Call shows here at the station. Write a letter with a question, and I'll call your home and answer your question. And you may not like what I say. This is what I always repeat. You may not like what I say, but until you have access to the information, which I'm willing to share with you, you have no right to disagree. I'll show you where you can find out for yourself, and then you come to your conclusion and say, no, I've read that, and I don't reinterpret it that way at all. But I want you to look at it yourself first, and then form an opinion, and not before you examine it.
Okay, now let's get right into
today. Well, this is income tax time. Everyone's going to send in their little envelope by Monday and to the Internal Revenue. I have filed my income tax, and I had to enclose a check. And with the check, down below at the bottom of your tax form, there is a little box where you can ask for a refund if you want it, and you put an X. And I have marked the X and I want a refund. And I've written and enclosed a letter for the Director of Internal Revenue. And I'm going to share it with you, the gist of this letter, because there is a group out in Salinas and Greenfield and group in Carmel, Monterey, that are withholding part of their taxes for various reasons. And they object to the war in Vietnam or the amount of money going into the prison correctional system that's abused. My particular reason for wanting a refund on my tax money is that the government was overthrown in 1963 and that a share of my taxes goes to keep the National Archives locked up. And in those buildings would be the proof of the conspiracies to kill Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. So I sent a letter to the Director of Internal Revenue, enclosed is my tax form accompanied by my payment of taxes. Below the form is a space to mark when a refund is requested, and you will notice I have marked that area, and I now request from you a return of the amount being paid. To support the existing government in any way is to give approval to legalize murder and the assassination of our former president, John Kennedy, civil rights leader Martin Luther King, and Senator Robert Kennedy, a candidate for election in 1968. For 9 years, I have researched extensively these particular murders, as well as those of members of minority races, searching their share of American opportunities. My documentation is extensive and includes 8 years of cross-filing of hearings before the Warren Commission and comparing it to government documents. Examining 1,800 pages of Warren Commission staff lawyers to each other on their own doubts, their lack of information, and their information admission of fudging the report, I have examined 300 books on the political assassinations, espionage systems, and State Department history to know how these murders were planned, who planned them, what banks were used, and where the guilty reside. There are secret societies existing today to perpetuate the wishes of a handful of extremely wealthy and powerful persons, and before the elections of 1972, their names should be exposed. Among those groups is the Lincoln Club in Southern California, a secret organization behind President Nixon. The National Archives contains proof of the conspiracy to kill President John Kennedy. The arbitrary date of 75 years to examine John Kennedy's code or to view the X-rays of his autopsy is set by the past President Lyndon Johnson and President Richard Nixon at the present time. Both men came into office because of the death of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. I am familiar with the dirty games the Internal Revenue plays in the scheme of things. Therefore, I am not appealing to your reason in the matter. I simply tell you that I wish my money returned because part of my money will be used to keep those secrets locked up, which would prove the country was overthrown in November 22, 1963. The taxpayers pay between $60 million and $80 million each year for a classification system which is only necessary to conceal from citizens what is really taking place. The Freedom of Information Act means little to the Internal Revenue. In tested cases, they have already turned it around and kept information concealed. Thank you very much. Mae Russell. Now that is the gist of the tax.
You expect a visit from an IRS agent?
I expect...
Shortly?
I expect that they will turn down, they will not refund my tax, and then I will place a suit against them. They have 4 months to answer, to either not answer or to turn me down, and then I can place a suit against the federal government, in which I will throw all of my research and documentation. And the reasons why, I have articles and proof that it costs between $60 and $80 million a year to keep the National Archives going. And I have a list of what is in the National Archives that pertains to my particular 9 years research. And as a citizen of the United States, I'm not going to pay the keeper to lock up the answers to my research. I know what's there and the proof that the government was overthrown. Now, if anybody else wants, that's listening, is turning in their taxes, wants to put an X on a refund and join my class action or suit or join in with me, they're welcome to do it. You can think about it if you have the courage. There are a lot of people complaining about taxes. There aren't many people that have the courage. And there's a lot of people that say, well, I haven't done the research you've done, so I don't know enough about it. But if you just take the autopsy X-rays of John Kennedy that weren't developed and ask why one man can decide who sees those X-rays, like Dr. Latimer went in the National Archives a month ago and said, I was selected by Burke Marshall, an attorney for IBM, to see those x-rays.
And Dr. Latimer was a urologist.
He was a urologist. He saw the x-rays. And by seeing the x-rays, he said Oswald did it alone.
Maybe you should explain what a urologist is and what a person who examines x-rays is called.
Well, you know, should I make some jokes about that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe he went in there to piss on the x-rays. And who knows what he did in there? I don't know. He looked at the x-rays of John Kennedy, and he said, Oswald did it alone. There's no medical doctor licensed in the world that can look at an x-ray of a body and tell you who shot a gun. That's impossible. All he was supposed to say is where the holes were and how many. And the very proof that he came out with his answer shows what the intentions were of having them there. But the big problem is, who selects the man that gets the front page of the New York Times and CBS and NBC and all the media to proclaim the gospel truth again? Now, last night, did you see Channel 2 on television? They're doing a series called The 60s, A Year of the 60s.
No, I didn't.
They're carrying a whole series on what happened through the years of the turbulent 60s. And TV Guide wrote it up as we're describing the year 1966. Last night they were on, this was Wednesday night. They were on doing 1966, and they were going to prove that Oswald did it alone, that he killed John Kennedy alone. Now, this is, brainwashing and hysteria of the establishment to reiterate to the new generation growing up and perpetuate their old lies, because, first of all, the assassination was in 1963, and the Warren Report came out in 64. So it wasn't any excuse to say in 1966 that Oswald was a lone assassin. But the way the show began, it starts off with scenes of violence and TV, and people were screaming and yelling, and children home watching the television were watching women being strangled, you know, in front of the screen while their mothers were out, supposedly. And American mind was being formed with violence. Then they switched to the tower in Texas where the Whitman boy gunned down 34 students, and he went berserk. And they had this gunning on that camera. Then the camera switches to the Boston Strangler, and he's being taken off. And the law enforcement man is saying, well, a lot of nurses will sleep better tonight now that he's locked up. Then they go to Chicago with the speck boy, and they speak about the one nurse that got away, but nine were strangled and tied by the neck. Then there's a cut to Illinois where Congressman Percy is talking about his daughter, and his wife is saying how the child was in her room and she was murdered in her sleep. And then a switch to In Cold Blood and the family that was killed out on the farm, and the men being taken off to the gas chamber of this crime. And then the announcer says, the national obsession with violence dates back 3 years to the death of President Kennedy. See, TV Guide is going to say 66 has to do, you know, with the Warren Commission being right. But they have to throw it back to President Kennedy. And then the commission, Mark Lane, got up and gave a brief speech about the assassination. And Marguerite Oswald spoke about her son working for the State Department and the Navy and getting his passport while he was in the Marines to go to the Soviet Union. He was sent by the State Department. But then a member of the government said, America would be very upset if there was no conspiracy, that we create in our heads a need. We have to satisfy a basic need we all have towards violence, and that we look for conspiracies because we're so fed with violence that we have to create intrigue and stories. There isn't enough going for us on a day-to-day basis that we have to feed our minds with these demented views of conspiracies. And he went on to say that Americans reject the ordinary to find refuge in the extraordinary. And if we had another investigation, the critics would never be satisfied, because they said it wouldn't serve them that the same government is investigating the second time around that investigated the first time around. Well, that may be a good, valid reason for not having another investigation. If the same people do it, the critics aren't going to be satisfied. Of course they're not. And then John J. McCloy got up, one of the members of the Warren Commission, introduced his former president of the World Bank, and he said, why, we have our own integrity. We couldn't say that anything that wasn't true. The members of the commission are at our own integrity at stake. And you only had to rely on common sense to get this Warren report together. Well, I read on one program weeks back a commission document I have of John J. McCloy dated in August, 2 weeks before the Warren report went to press, on the chapter he was supposed to write. And there wasn't documentation for four sentences in the whole chapter. He was asking the staff lawyers what proof, what documentation, how can we say this? How do we know this is true? There's no evidence of this. How can we get away with that? John J. McCloy is chewing out the people who are going to write his chapter, that he's going to put his name on, just before they go to press, that nothing that they're saying has any basis in fact. And then he's on the television last night saying, you just had to use common sense to write the Warren Report. And then he went on to say, you like that?
I guess he assumes that people have forgotten. And where does this, did this ever get into print, what McCloy, you say, said about the Warren Report?
No, I'm going to do, we're going to talk at length on another program about a newsletter that's being in the forming stages now, and we will print these documents of John Jay's, McCloy's letter. And then when a man like that gets on the national media and gives his little speech about how he put his chapter together that it just took common sense, we'll put the two side by side, his actual letter to the commission staff. And sometimes these radio shows go so fast that it's better to have a printed word to see it, you know, and take down what they're saying.
I'm just wondering, though, if you can reconcile the public McCloy to the not-so-public McCloy in the form of his comments about the Warren Commission.
Well, you know, you can't. It's just like reconciling the public Mr. Kissinger to the private at the Security Council meetings, National Security Council over India and Pakistan, or the Pentagon Papers, the public McNamara and the private one, or Henry Cabot Lodge. There is a big discrepancy, or the ITT situation going on. What we're going into is the age of truth. It may be the age of Aquarius. It may be the age of truth. And we're going to publicly expose the two versions of each person. That's what I'm going to try and do. I do this every week. I try on the radio show. You know, Bob Dylan has in one of his songs, even the President of the United States must sometimes stand naked, you know. And we're going to see some of these people a little better. We're going to take off some of the clothing of these particular political drapes and judicial robes and see what's really underneath them, you see. The program ended by saying that Oswald died by the gun, and with him the full story of the president's death may never be told. Well, that they have a very final sanctimonious thing about this section on violence on the 60s that was played. But the point is this, Jack Ruby, he was alive, and there was more to be told that Jack Ruby knew about Oswald. He killed Oswald. And the story didn't die when Oswald died, and it didn't die when Ruby died, because the investigation still continues all over the nation, and we'll get to the truth. It isn't difficult, and we'll just stay with it every day. I have to bring in, there are so many headlines this week that I really don't know where to start. And
the AT&T thing fascinates me. Are we going to be talking about that at all?
Well,
or I should say, are you going to? I'm going to be asking questions.
I'm not going to talk about it today, except the fact that it's very important that Mr. Nixon, President Nixon, has not allowed his White House aides, Mr. Flanagan, or other aides, to testify before the Senate Investigating Committee on the ITT. And the Senate Investigating Committee has said that they, therefore, will probably turn down the nomination of Mr. Kleindienst this week, that he... If the president wants to make his nominee for attorney general a sacrificial lamb on the altar of executive privilege, that will be his responsibility, Senator Irving said.
Now, I, as a newsman, really found that interesting, because what the president did is he used his what's called what executive
privilege to keep
privilege to keep his aides from having to testify before a Senate committee.
Yeah,
that's sort of like the people say when you take the Fifth Amendment. In a way, it's.
Incriminating
yourself, because even though you're refusing not to testify because it might incriminate you.
It means you're involved.
It's an implication. It implies that you're guilty.
Well, just like the shredding machine.
You've got something to hide.
That's right. The shredding machine. It's the same thing. Well, you see, when Richard Nixon reconstructed the whole CIA and moved Richard Helms right under the White House, everybody who's under the umbrella cloak of the White House never has to testify. If I'm saying that the CIA and the FBI were on these political assassinations and these men are called, they don't have to testify. It's the cloak. It's the cloak of the president.
Do you know how that cloak was established?
I haven't gone into the history of that cloak, but every week I am coming into new channels of information because it all is fitting together. But this is a very serious problem, and as important as anything we can say in terms of dialogue assassination.
It's almost like having a national archives every day for current events.
Well, sure. See, the president
to hide behind.
The president should have no immunity. He has to account to the people, and nobody that he hires. Like Flanagan. Flanagan set up the contact with the man who gave the information to call off the settlement of the ITT thing. And if this is true, there's nobody under the White House employed by the government. You see, we pay the salary of Flanagan. Your taxes pay the salary of Flanagan. When I came in this morning, somebody, a nurse in town, was objecting to her high rate of taxes, living a very Spartan life and just making it with nothing, going outside the minimal requirements of existence. And I said, well, join my suit. The taxes are paying these men to keep these secrets and to classify them. And what is executive immunity? Even the president shouldn't be immune. I don't think J. Edgar Hoover, Richard Helms, I don't think anyone in the national government should be allowed.
Well, let me ask you the question, since you're the one who's being interviewed each week, sort of. Do you think that it would be advisable for listeners to question the government about this executive privilege?
Oh, absolutely. I'm really looking forward, you know, the more I think about it, as a newsletter getting out every 2 weeks to the people and giving them ideas or addresses or places to write. Just put it this way, you have to use your intelligence. I have a quotation I bring in. It's on a folder I have every week by Buckminster Fuller. And it says, intelligence should be recognized as a global resource. Thinking is a consciously disciplined separation of relevant feedback from irrelevant feedback. And people should recognize that this human resource isn't one or two people that have a particular, you know, like an oil here or a mineral here. Intelligence is in each of us. I am not more intelligent than anyone listening to my show. And I am talking a language that people, I hope, are understanding. This is why they stay with the show, or it's getting attention, you know, at different levels now and spreading around the country. You out there have the intelligence to figure out what's happening. All you don't have is the energy or the dedication to put your arm down to a piece of paper and move a letter along. But if you figure out what's happening, even the Senate committee was incensed by the president saying, no, I'm going to use executive privilege. And this is one of the things as important as AMCHIPCA or the marijuana thing that I signed that sheet this morning for you. You know, these petitions. There should be petitions against executive privilege in some form. People should really recognize and even put it on a ballot if they have to, that the wheels of judgment, they have their own archives, a day-to-day, and we're going to go into another.
Well, Senator Tunney is on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Maybe he'd be a good one to write to ask about that.
Exactly.
Senator John Tunney here in California.
The executive privilege, at what point does it stop, and can that be overruled? What does that include? It must have a boundary. Of, you know, like if he wants to just tell us, you know, how many times he slept with Pat, that's executive privilege. But the rest is our business, you know. His own personal life, that's his. And the rest is ours. We put him in there. We pay the taxes. And he's there for us. And nothing else is executive privilege except when the girl is pregnant and doesn't want to tell America, or when she's engaged. His little family secrets, that's his. Or where he's going to go for Christmas, or what he's giving Tricia for her birthday. That's his own business, you see. And the rest is ours. And that's all he's there for, is for us. He's a public figure. He retires like Lyndon Johnson with royalties and a fortune, maybe 16, 17 million. And he's public domain. He wanted political life, and he's out in the public, and there's no such thing as executive privilege.
Yeah, there is a public misconception that federal officials are somehow, above being human, and they don't do things wrong, but just... Within the past week, a U.S. congressman was indicted by a federal jury for tax evasion on over $150,000 worth of taxes.
And siphoning money down to private banks in Florida and a lot of other things, and that their connections are terribly important, who they work for.
So congressmen and vice presidents and presidents, conceivably, even history has shown, 80 years later after they're dead, they do some things which might have been questioned while they were still in office.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, now we're going into another letter-writing thing. The Emil Younger is the Attorney General of our state, and he is pushing for the death penalty. He isn't satisfied with the decision of the Supreme Court. And Ronald Reagan is helping out in this thing in trying to get the death penalty decision on the November ballot. And the remark that Reagan gave was that society has a right to protect itself against assassins and murderers. Now, I maintain that the hysteria about the death penalty that Emil Younger and Robert Haunton and Ronald Reagan want is that there are patsies up at San Quentin, namely John Frazier, associated with the Oda family murder, Charles Manson, who did not kill anybody in the Sharon Tate home or in the Bianca family, and Sirhan Sirhan, who did not kill Robert Kennedy. Those are political patsies, and if those men could talk, they could overthrow the entire form of government that exists. If James Ray and those three guys could have a rap session, and I could sit with them, and we could really have a dialogue on what happened, and they were given immunity. The real people that are continuing these assassinations, the Himmler, the Goering, the Hitler of our United States, and this can be documented over and again, they are, and I'm going to say this, Richard Nixon, John Mitchell, Emily Younger, Robert Houghton, and Chief of Police Davis in L.A., they are perpetuating a system with provocateurs and decoys and patsies, and the anxiety and the hysteria to get these murderers legalized in their death penalty is a thing that they have in their heads, because these men, as long as they're alive, know the truth. And if the truth comes out, it topples our whole system. Now, that's a broad saying, and I will go back to it in specifics. It happened in the state of California this week with the trial of Hugo Pinnell going on right now out in Salinas, and with the Angela Davis case and the killing of James Carr this week. And go back to Evelyn Younger and the state of California as a branch of a conspiratorial system. But before we go into that, there's one other thing. We did a show, the first of its kind in radio broadcasting, I believe, on when the death threat was exposed to kill Cesar Chavez. I did one whole hour tape on KLRB on who would kill Chavez, how it would be done by the help of the federal government, the assistance. It wouldn't be a low-level farmer plan. It was a large plan that Chavez would go into the category of political assassinations like Walter Reuther and Yablonsky, and the killing of Yablonsky was never examined properly, of Joseph Yablonsky. And in the news this week, there's several people that are going to trial for the conspiracy to kill, and there's a woman who's turning state's evidence on her father, who was the employee of the United Mine Workers. Now, the FBI has arrested this week they called a middle echelon United Mine Worker official on federal conspiracy charges. But the middle echelon goes higher and higher and higher and higher. And this is the way our political thing would work. If we took our patsies, we'd take them all the way up to the White House. So this man has turned evidence against her father. She's going to not get the death penalty. And she says the alleged conspiracy goes much higher. Why do I charge the federal government with these crimes? Because the FBI... If I could figure out how high it goes sitting in Carmel Valley and make a radio show on some of these things, certainly a year later the FBI could have found, you know, a year before the FBI could have found it out. You know, it stands to reason that a lot of the stuff that I put together, just with the limited access and not traveling around the country and no private investigator working for me of any kind, if I can put this together, the FBI could have, and if they don't, there's a conspiracy to cover it up, and that is a conspiracy to keep the truth. So now that the girls turn state's evidence, the FBI has to do something, but they wouldn't do it until then. Because Yablonsky feared for his life, he feared the man who succeeded him as president of the United Mine Workers, Tony Boyle. He mentioned Tony Boyle in his lifetime. And when the men were paid to kill the Yablonsky family, they said a man named Tony hired us. In the news media, the Associated Press, United Press, the FBI, said no link between that Tony and the Tony that is the president of United Mine Workers. Well, there may not be a link, but there may be, you see. And if they don't go into it, if this woman didn't talk about her own father because she's saving her own life and maybe her father's, the FBI wouldn't have made the rest. So this week we find the conspiracy, the source in the newspaper said this week, the conspiracy doesn't end here. It goes much higher, and we expect more important developments soon. Sources said the indictment charging Prater was based on a statement given to the FBI earlier this month by Annette Gilley. William Jackson Prater was arrested in Lake City, Tennessee, for conspiring to interfere with the rights of the union members. But it goes beyond him even, you see. It's going to go even higher. And this particular woman sat, Mrs. Gilley, sat with her father, and he's 63 years old, a retired coal miner from La Follette, a former president of the United Mine Workers local district, and he's been charged with murder and conspiracy, and now it's going higher than him. It's going to keep going.
Okay, we will continue with Dialogue Assassination after we identify the station. This is KLRB Carmel, Stereo 101.7, serving you 24 hours a day.